The time being 3 o'clock, the meeting of the redistricting committee for Monday, September 13, will come to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 1001 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Barsari, please call the roll.
Chair Murphy?
Here.
Vice Chair Cleburne?
Present.
Representative Torkelson?
Present.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Garofalo. Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Igoe?
Present.
Representative Lee is excused. Representative Long?
Present.
Representative Munson?
Present.
Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Representative New Brindley?
New Brindley, present.
Representative O'Driscoll?
O'Driscoll, present.
Thank you. Representative Olson?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Welcome. Representative Schultz?
Present.
Representative Stevenson? Representative Stevenson? Representative Vang?
Present.
Representative West?
Present.
Then one more time, Representative Garofalo. All right, Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is our third listening session, the third listening session of the redistricting committee. We posted this meeting a month ago to give more public notice than usual because the matter or the testimony that we are receiving is so vitally important to the work of our committee. We respect and value the perspectives each person offers, and we welcome input from all Minnesotans. We are holding the hearings via Zoom at a variety of times to reach a wide range of people. We acknowledge that no schedule fits every person. So if people are not available to participate via Zoom or during these times that are posted, the options to submit written testimony is provided, and written testimony will be accepted by the committee through the month of September. Given the number of people who signed up to testify, we ask that testimony be limited to 3 to 5 minutes to provide everyone a similar opportunity to testify. For those who have more to say than time allows, written testimony can supplement and the oral testimony that is given in the 3 to 5 minutes. Written testimony containing recommendations will be posted on the redistricting committee website. While we would like to get the testimony in advance of the hearing, we will accept written testimony for the committee consideration through the end of September. The purpose of these public input sessions is for members to listen and to what the public has to say. Unless it is for purposes of clarification, the committee members will try to hold their comments back. We have 2 hours blocked today, and we have a 15-minute presentation by the state demographer and House Research Redistricting Expert, Matt Gehring. Mr. Gehring, Before we start testimony, will you brief us on the demographics and the time schedule that the redistricting committee is under for our purposes of redistricting the census of 2020. Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, yes. Just for the record, Matt Gehring from the House Research Department. I'm going to share my screen quickly. And Madam Chair, my portion of the presentation is going to focus primarily on the timeline and some of the local government duties that relate to the redistricting process. And then assuming Ms. Brower is able to make it onto the call, she's got the data for you on the demographics that came out of the census. So the document that's in the committee materials that you have that I have shared on the screen here is one that you've seen before. This is just a refresher on the timeline and the deadlines that will be coming up in the next several months related to the redistricting process. You'll see the big one for legislative purposes is February 15th of 2022. That's the date that the statutes expect that there will be fully enacted legislative and congressional district boundaries following the work of this committee and then the work of the full House and Senate together. You see in this chart, there are some other dates that I have listed as well, just for those in the audience who might be from local governments there, you should know that there are, in addition to the legislative work, there are sort of wheels that will turn at the local government level as well. So once the legislative and congressional district boundaries are enacted, there are requirements for local governments to reestablish municipal precinct boundaries, as well as drawing new local government election districts. And there are deadlines in March of 2022 and April of 2022 for those activities to be completed. The election cycle that these new districts will be used at for the first time will be the 2022 election cycle. So the state primary next year will be August 9th, 2022, and the general election November 8th of 2022. On the second page of the handout that I have, lists out the sort of responsibilities, both of the legislature as well as of counties, cities, towns, and school districts. And I put this here again just for kind of a refresher for those, I know you've seen it on the committee before, but for those that might be new in the audience, the responsibility of the legislature by the state constitution is to draw new legislative and congressional district boundaries after every decade. So that includes the work of actually drawing the maps. And then also as part of that, you'll adopt principles that will be used to guide the drawing of the maps. And some of those principles, as we've talked about previously, include requirements that are based in the federal constitution, some based in the state constitution, and then some that you will adopt as sort of traditional principles or other principles as you wish. So things like equal population and contiguity and some other principles, as we've talked about before, are sort of required of you based on constitutional law, but you also have some flexibility to adopt other principles. And I expect that in the course of the testimony today, you'll hear some more about that from some of the testifiers. At the local government level, there are county responsibilities for establishing county commissioner districts. And you see in this page the deadlines and some specific statutory references for that work to occur. And then cities, towns, and school districts also have responsibility for their own jurisdictions. And again, you see some statutory citations there for the standards that govern that process, including what are in effect statutory principles for drawing precinct and ward boundaries, which are in state law rather than the Constitution, as well as deadlines and then what happens at the local government level if that work isn't completed. And Madam Chair, that is the end of my portion of the presentation. I'm happy to take questions if you have them.
Okay. I don't see any hands up. So we will proceed with the testimony at this time. And when Dr. Brower comes, we will fit her in.
Chair Murphy,
yes.
Dr. Brower is now here.
Oh, good. Well, Dr. Brower, are you ready to present?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, there we go. So sorry about the delay.
That's fine.
So I'm going to share with you the slides that I have prepared. I hope. There we go. Can you see them all right?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So I want to just give some background on the growth that's happened in and around the third district to set the context for the work that will be done for this district. As you can see, district number three grew the most relative to the other eight districts in Minnesota. So it grew by 74,908 people, and it is now above the ideal population size. Meaning, should this committee choose to adopt similar boundaries, they would need to contract in size in order to make up an ideal district of, hang on one second, please, of 713,312 people. So assuming that this committee keeps a similar size, we will have a shrinking in geographic area of this district due to the growth that has happened over the last decade. If we look specifically at this district, you can see that most of the areas are showing a percentage increase. We're looking now at the cities and townships within the third district here, and you can see that nearly everyone is in blue. And those areas are indicating growth for each of those cities and townships across the district. If we look at the racial groups, how they grew, there was a slight decline in the white non-Hispanic population. This is similar to what we've seen for the state overall. It reflects an aging population in the state. It's also true of the third district, just by a very small percentage, by about 0.4%. And what you can see is that communities of color or BIPOC communities have grown within the district. In particular, the Black or African-American community went from about 43,000 people to about 64,000 people over that 10-year time span, or a growth of about 49%. We saw a similar growth in the Asian population from 41,000 to 63,000, a growth of a percentage of 54% over the decade. Similar with respect to the Hispanic or Latino population as well. Overall, the whole district grew by about 10% over the course of the decade. Now, there were some changes in data collection. I won't go into a great amount of detail here. We know that race and ethnicity, the way that that was collected by the Bureau, changed a bit. So pay special attention to multiple race groups. That's grown considerably because of that. And also because the population truly has changed. The new way that the Census Bureau collects race does paint a better picture of how people view themselves, but it's still not perfect. And so while race gives us one view into communities of color, communities of interest, there are many other communities of interest, as you well know. It can be defined in many ways in addition to a race definition. The data that we get out of the census were collected during a pandemic. We're still researching just how accurate these data are, but they are the very best data that we have and really the only data that we have to make these decisions at this point. So we will continue to look into issues if there are accuracy issues, but it is what it is with respect to the data that we have. There was all kinds of uncertainty as we collected these data. So far, they're looking pretty good, but we're going to keep investigating if there are any kind of abnormalities that we need to investigate. And then finally, the Census Bureau is using something called differential privacy, which is a way to protect the confidentiality of respondents. So if you see anomalies within the data as you're doing redistricting, it may be due to this new method of privacy protection. It impacts communities of color or smaller communities more so than bigger communities. And so if you see something that looks not quite right there, that's something else that you can bring to us, and we're happy to look it over and try to give an educated guess as to whether it's related to differential privacy or some other data collection issue, or if it really reflects a true change. And so with that, that is my overview of the census data and how the third district has changed.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brower. And thank you for talking about the differential privacy term. And I also would like to reread the definition that many people heard for the first time, or even if it wasn't the first time, but that was emphasized at the National Conference of State Legislatures meeting in August, in which, or July, in previous months, that Wendy and Underhill gave a definition for communities of interest. Communities of interest was identified as geographical areas such as neighborhoods of a city or regions of a state where the residents have common demographic or political interests that do not necessarily coincide with the boundaries of a political subdivision, such as a city or a county. So it expands what some people used to call community of interest. It expands that beyond a little bit. And that goes along, I think, with Dr. Brower, with your summary of how the third district has grown. So thank you.
Thank you.
We will proceed then with the testimony from the people of the third district that have come to give us their opinions and their neighbors, perhaps their neighbors' opinions of what should we be thinking about when we're thinking about the changes that are necessary, absolutely necessary for the third district. The first person to have called and to testify, and we are going to listen to, is Catherine Kurdzell from Coon Rapids. Welcome to the committee. We are ready to listen.
Chairman Murphy and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to share my comments. My name is Catherine Kurdzell, and I have lived in Coon Rapids for 43 years. When we moved here, all of Coon Rapids was represented in the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate with individuals who lived in the city they represented, the city of Coon Rapids. Since that time, redistricting has sliced and diced our community, dividing us into different Minnesota House and Senate districts. Today, Coon Rapids is very well represented by one congressional district, CD3, but three different state Senate districts and four different state House districts. Only one state senator and one state House representative live in the city of Coon Rapids. I'm here today to ask that consideration be given to not only have us remain in the third congressional district, but to put the city of Coon Rapids back together, to create a unified House and Senate district that can speak as one voice in representing the needs specific to our population. And these are my reasons. I live in a Minnesota House district where only three precincts are located in Coon Rapids, with the majority of the precincts located in Andover. The entire city of Andover is in CD6. The three Coon Rapids precincts, as I said, are well represented and located in CD3. When I go about my daily life, I look south to the city of Coon Rapids. Our constituents' needs are met with our shopping hubs located in Coon Rapids, the Northdale and Riverdale that serve the Coon Rapids committee community, our health providers, dentists, health clinics, our hospital, all located in Coon Rapids. Our schools, elementary, middle, high school, our community college, located in Coon Rapids. Our transportation hubs, the Foley Park and Ride, the North Star Station, located in Coon Rapids. Our recreation areas, Coon Rapids Dam, Springbrook Nature Center, hiking, biking trails, all located in Coon Rapids. And if we are in need for fire, rescue, or police assistance, we look to the city of Coon Rapids. The most important reason for unifying the city of Coon Rapids and having it remain in CD3 is because the city of Coon Rapids looks like the neighborhoods in our three precincts. The population in our precinct neighborhoods reflect the racial, ethnic, income, age, occupation, and educational diversity like the city of Coon Rapids in CD3. In other words, our demographics align more closely with CD3 in the city of Coon Rapids than CD6 in the city of Andover. It's necessary that it's the reason I'm here today, to ask that consideration be given to put the city of Coon Rapids back together to remain in CD3 and to create a unified House and Senate district that can speak as one voice in representing the needs specific to our diverse population. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kurzel. The second person, Richard Jenness. Mr. Jenness?
Chair Murphy, he is on the call, but you might want to move on to the next and we can come back to him when he gets it technology figured out.
All right, thank you. Glenda Golden.
And Chair Murphy, Ms. Golden is not on the call, so you might want to move by
her. So, hi, this is Richard Jenness. I'm with ACER. Glenda and I worked together collaboratively to form her testimonies. I know she's trying to get on. It might just be some technological problems, but she received the email with the Zoom link, so hopefully she'll be on soon. In the meanwhile, if wanted, I could give my testimony.
Please go ahead, Mr. Jenness.
Sounds good. All right. Good day, and thank you to Representative Mary Murphy, to everyone attending this testimony, for hearing me speak and listening as I share my thoughts on congressional redistricting in the 3rd District. My name is Richard Jenness, and I'm here today to speak as a community organizer for African Career Education and Resource, and as a concerned individual who has seen problems with the 3rd District firsthand and knows how the redistricting process affects these communities. My first consideration is how the districts are being mapped. Sometimes communities with common interests and similar investments are divided. Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center, for instance, have similarly diverse populations and a number of common resources, such as churches, mosques, synagogues, small businesses, and shops that are essential in both communities. Other northwestern suburbs of Minneapolis, including Crystal, Robbinsdale, and New Hope, are also connected by common locations and interests. Accordingly, I recommend to everyone here that in the redistricting process, these communities stay together so that they can elect officials who understand and represent their needs, and so that issues unique to these communities can be collectively addressed. Another concern is what happens after the districts have been drawn. All too often, underprivileged areas are overlooked by local government while more affluent communities received the benefit of government attention and policy. I have personally been to apartments with rodent and insect infestations, no security system to stop intruders from gaining entry, totally unresponsive management and maintenance, and ruthless rent demands, even amidst the COVID crisis. The northwest suburbs of Minneapolis, including Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Crystal, Robbinsdale, and New Hope, were already particularly vulnerable before the epidemic, and the government pattern of overlooking these locations has only furthered that divide. Government officials can address the needs of these parts of Congressional District 3 by going out to the area and having conference meetings, imposing serious penalties and restrictions on predatory landlords and management systems, ensuring proper assistance in Section 8 in general subsidized housing. All of these issues have been relevant and repeated concerns for residents for far too long. And the stories I have heard of renters being refused rental assistance by housing authorities, even as it is readily accepted in more affluent suburbs around Minneapolis, continue to this day. In the redistricting process, the temptation is often to divide districts according to what serves the political parties of the mappers or according to some agreement. The maps are often drawn in bizarre, meandering form in order to throw certain members into convenient districts or increase the chances of certain political outcomes. I am asking that the primary consideration for redistricting in this instance be the community alignments and common interest of nearby cities, the unique needs of each area, and the opportunity for individuals with long overlooked needs to politically unite within those districts. Once the maps are made, I am entrusting local representation in my district and in the district of the people I serve through my position with the task of fair, equal, and equitable representation. While the challenges of the epidemic, poverty, and broaching government gridlock are great, I have never lost hope that the power of community and advocacy are greater. The driving force for change and for community betterment starts with a mapping process that is uniting, unselfish, and respectful of common core community interests. Thank you once more to Representative Murphy and for everyone who gave their time today to hear about community issues. Your drive to better communities and the people who live there comes with the ability to make tremendous change. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jenness. Glenda Golden, are you ready or?
Chair Murphy, she is not on.
Okay, we'll get back to her when she is ready.
I'll try to make contact with her too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenness. Kaylee Schaff from Coon Rapids.
Yes, hi. Thank you for your time today. Like you just said, my name's Kaylee Schaff. I'm here to talk about Coon Rapids. And note that, like Catherine previously indicated, our city is split across four different House districts and three Senate districts. Of those seven representatives, only two live in Coon Rapids. And I believe that Coon Rapids should be represented by, one or two of these people to cover the whole city. So specifically, I wanted to talk a little bit about the district that I live in, which is represented by a Coon Rapids representative, Zach Stevenson. He also represents Champlin, which if you live in Coon Rapids, you very rarely spend time in Champlin. These two cities are remarkably different in demographics. Coon Rapids is much more diverse and makes medium household income is about $20,000 less per year. Frequently, if I ever need to go anywhere outside of this community, I would head to Blaine to our east, because everything I need is here in Coon Rapids, from shopping to my doctor, my dentist, my veterinarian, all of the things our family does are here in Coon Rapids. Champlin, in order for us to get to, we have to leave Coon Rapids, go either to Anoka or to Brooklyn Park, cross a bridge, and then drive into the city. I just don't see a reason that the two cities are put together. So that's basically what I wanted to say. I believe that Champlin could be better represented in an area perhaps with Anoka, where they share a fire department and a bridge and have similar demographic information. But I think Coon Rapids, like Catherine had indicated in her testimony, really should be represented by one or two representatives. So thank you guys for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schaff. Greg Pepin from Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Pepp. Thank you. My name is Greg Pepp, and I reside in Rogers, Minnesota, where I've lived for the past 28 years. Like many in Rogers, I live close to the Hennepin and Wright County border, and much of our shopping and travel patterns take us into Wright County. Except for a very short time, I've lived my entire life in the 3rd Congressional District, and that goes back to the 1960s when Clark McGregor was my congressman. The 3rd District has historically consisted of suburban communities, and over the decades has expanded west to include more of western and northwestern Hennepin County, where there are very similar communities of interest. In 2012, the court ordered redistricting included the eastern section of Carver County, which was a natural extension of this historical expansion of the 3rd District that made sense. At the same time, however, the court breached the large natural boundary of the Mississippi River when it went north and east to include Coon Rapids and Anoka County in the 3rd District. With all due respect to the court, this was an unusual and rather odd addition that didn't make sense either geographically or from a transportation or communities of interest perspective, as Ms. Schaff has previously indicated. In fact, at the time the map was drawn in 2012, the most direct and convenient way to access the Coon Rapids portion of the 3rd District was to leave the district via Highway 169, as she has indicated, travel through Anoka, which is in the 6th Congressional District, and then re-enter the 3rd District in Coon Rapids via Highway 10. The Mississippi River is a strong and natural boundary that effectively separates Coon Rapids from the existing 3rd District border communities, which include Rogers, Dayton, Champlin, and Brooklyn Park. And the city of Coon Rapids would be a much better fit in a neighboring district. The 6th is the likely candidate if the maps were to stay the same. Keeping Coon Rapids with the remainder of Anoka County and removing it from the 3rd District would allow the 3rd District to continue its historical westward expansion, which could easily be accomplished in one of two ways. The first is to simply add the remainder of Carver County to the 3rd District. And from a population perspective, I believe this change would be very close to a break-even proposition. The second option would be to swap Coon Rapids for eastern Wright County cities such as Hanover, St. Michael, Albertville, and Otsego. Either of these reconfigurations make much more sense for a number of reasons. First, Highways 212 and 7 are historical transportation corridors that easily and currently connect Hennepin and Carver County. Similarly, Highways 12 and 55 and Interstate I-94 are among the highest traveled highways and freeways in the state and seamlessly connect Hennepin and Wright County. The current rebuild of I-94 through Maple Grove, Rogers, St. Michael, and Albertville, all the way to Monticello, will make this an even smoother corridor. Secondly, adding Carver and or Wright counties to the 3rd will continue the historical blending of suburban and exurban communities that have intertwined economies consisting of retail, manufacturing, and agriculture. Many of the westernmost regions of Hennepin County are largely agricultural in nature, dotted with new housing subdivisions as farmers retire and sell their land. Coon Rapids, in contrast, is fully developed without the same agricultural and economic development interests as western Hennepin and eastern Carver and Wright counties. Thirdly, western Hennepin and eastern Carver and Wright counties also share historical settlement and religious affiliations with family names that go back 2 and 3 generations and continue to this day. The fourth reason is that there's a long history of business connections. The I-94 West Chamber of Commerce has for decades included businesses from Maple Grove, Rogers, St. Michael, and Otsego. The Chamber's very popular annual State of the Cities launch is attended by hundreds of business owners, developers, city council members, and government officials from both Hennepin and Wright counties. Madam Chair and members of the committee, these are just a few of the reasons why the 3rd Congressional District should be drawn to expand upon the district's roots and include eastern Carver and or western, and or eastern Wright County. Thank you for your time.
Holy cow. Thank you for your suggestion and your comprehensive, simple to understand suggestions that we could swap. I like that word, swap. And we will take your suggestions under consideration, and we will review your testimony as we go along.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Appreciate your input. Stephen Feiling.
Madam Chair, Mr. Feiling is not on the call, but Ms. Golden is now on the call.
Oh, good. Ms. Golden. Glenda Golden, Brooklyn Park. Not ready to talk.
It does look like she is not on now.
Okay.
Oh, she is on by phone. So I don't know if she's having technology issues.
Ms. Golden?
Perhaps are you she's talking? Muted.
Can you identify yourself, Ms. Golden, and proceed to talk?
Hi, I'm on the phone with Ms. Golden right now, and it seems like there's technology issues. She is speaking, but I don't think you can hear her. Is there a way to unmute her on your end, perhaps?
That was Richard Janis.
Yes.
And he's on the phone with Ms. Golden.
Yep.
Ms. Conley?
She is not muted on, I don't see that she is muted. So I think she's having some technology on her side.
Can you hear me now?
I can put the phone up to the computer, a little unconventional, but if it works.
Chair Murphy, does she have to hit *6 to unmute on a phone?
Good idea, Representative Schultz. *6.
Yeah, Glenda, they're saying you might have to hit *6 to unmute on your phone.
So I need to go back. I need to go back. Yeah. Oh, Lord. Okay. Let me get back into...
We're still attempting to figure it out. That might be okay. The issue.
We'll go on to Brett Ortler, who's
hello,
from Coon Rapids. And I bet you have a suggestion for us, too.
I do. Thank you, Chair Murphy and committee members. My name is Brett Ortler. I'm a Coon Rapids resident, and I'm not representing any organization. I'm especially concerned about the status of my currently fragmented state house district. So I'll just give you a bit of background about Coon Rapids, where I've lived nearly all my life. So with Anoka to the north and Fridley to the south, the historic core of Coon Rapids essentially spans the area from US Highway 10 to the Mississippi River. This boundary has its origins in regional history and geography. As the members of the committee may know, the Red River Oxcart Trails once passed directly through what would become Coon Rapids. In fact, if you've ever been on East River Road or Coon Rapids Boulevard, you've been on the old trails, which were once used by fur traders on their way up to Winnipeg. The Oxcart Trails, like our modern roads, parallel the eastern side of the Mississippi River. The reason for that is simple. Even today, traveling across the river, say, to reach Champlain, is difficult and inconvenient. The city of Coon Rapids, on the other hand, is a self-contained, contiguous area, that is home to all of the institutions necessary for a community. Commercial establishments such as Riverdale, great parks and schools, including both Coon Rapids High School and Anoka Ramsey Community College, hospital services at Mercy, and transportation hubs, whether it's ready access to the park and rides, the wider metro bus system, or Highway 10. Currently, however, the area described above is divided between 4 house districts and 2 senate districts. In particular, my current house district, 36A, covers territory in Coon Rapids, where I live and spend a vast majority of my time, and Champlain, a place that few folks in Coon Rapids regularly visit. In fact, to show how geographically disconnected my district is, I just pulled up directions from Google Maps and actually have to leave Coon Rapids, pass the Renoka, and cross the river to get to Champlin, or I could head south. Having my district splintered like this is much more than an issue of transportation. Coon Rapids is an important city with some 62,000 people as of the last census. But currently, we don't have a dedicated representative for much of our area. Instead, we have a number of representatives, and that makes it much harder for our community to have a dedicated voice in the legislature. For that reason, I'd recommend that the committee draft a House district that accurately represents the civic life of Coon Rapids and the on-the-ground realities of the city. Such a district would reflect the tried and true geographical realities, encompass the geographical and historical core of Coon Rapids, and enable Coon Rapids residents to have a House district that reflects a thriving community. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mr. Artler. And you brought the history in with the ancient trails, and that's that are still existing today as transportation routes. We really appreciate that. Is Miss Golden back? No. Peter Watson, Shorewood. We're back across the river.
Peter Watson is here.
Good.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Peter Watson. I've lived in Shorewood now for 46 years. I'm in Congressional District 3, Senate District 33, and House District 33B. I provided the committee with written testimony from which I will be reading excerpts. So if you want to see a fuller story, take a look at what I've given to Ms. Conley. As I think you know, I'm the lead plaintiff in Watson versus Simon. I appear today on behalf of the Watson plaintiffs. The parties in the case are now negotiating principles for the special redistricting penalty used in drawing districts. Oral argument on principles is set for November 3rd. The deadline for submitting plans has not been set. Thank you for listening to our recommendations on how the legislature might draw those districts so that the special redistricting panel need not. Last Tuesday, the Watson plaintiffs posted on the website of the League of Women Voters Minnesota our recommendation for congressional districts based on the 2020 census. This is the fourth congressional plan you have seen from us. The earlier plans were based on 2018 and 2019 population estimates. Likewise, we sent you two legislative plans, first based on the 2018 and the second based on the 2019 population estimates. Our Senate plan based on the 2020 census is out for review by my fellow plaintiffs. The House plan will follow after we agree on the Senate plan. We'll provide it to you when it is ready. All the plans we present will to the special redistricting panel will be least change plans. That is, they will change the current district boundaries, the ones used for the 2020 election, only as necessary to meet the constitutional requirement that their populations be equal. The legislature has authority to get creative in drawing new districts every 10 years. A court does not. That is why when you look at the plans drawn by the Watson plaintiffs, you will see they look a lot like the current districts, except that, as Ms. Brower has suggested, rural districts are larger and urban districts are smaller. The average new district in our plan retains 94% of the voting age population of its current district. That's for the congressional plan, 94%. This least change approach also means only small changes to the partisan lean of the districts. The most significant change is in the third district, which still favors the Democrats, but may no longer be competitive for a Republican. With the small changes being made by this plan, we encourage you to seriously consider enacting it at a special session this fall. That would give candidates an earlier start on organizing their campaigns, give election administrators more time to redraw precinct and ward boundaries, and relieve the special redistricting panel of having to do it for you on February 15th, 2022. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We have received your information. It will be posted. We are happy to receive your maps, and we appreciate your testimony and your hard work.
Thank you.
Ms. Golden.
It seems like there's continuing technological problems on Ms. Golden's side. I could read her testimony if you'd like. She shared it with me. Otherwise, we can continue to try to work those out.
Well, she had her hand up, so I thought I would call on her.
Sure. And I saw she was attempting to connect to audio. It might just be a bad connection there.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Nancy. Ms. Golden did submit written testimony, so all the members received it.
Oh, good. Would you rather wait for her to give it, or should I or Mr. Janice read it? Ms. Conley.
I'm fine either way.
Chair Murphy, I don't think it matters one way or the other, but members could just review it since it is submitted in writing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Golden. And please stay on and hear the rest of the testimony of people. And we're sorry about the technology problems. I certainly understand them, because I have at least one technological problem a day. Ms. Cleaver, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest that we go through the rest of the testifiers, and if Ms. Golden is still available at the end, then we could circle back at that time, and that might give her a longer period of time to work on it and not just be back and forth.
Good suggestion. Thank you. We will do that. Christopher Geisler from Coon Rapids.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Can you hear me all right?
Just fine. Thank you for coming.
Great, thank you. As you can probably imagine, I've lived in Coon Rapids all of my life, and I'm here to echo some of the sentiments you've already heard. As we've heard, my city is bisected into 7 different representations at the legislature there, but I wanted to provide a little additional context about my city. When we compare Coon Rapids to its peer cities by as far as the size of population, the next 15 larger cities all have one representative whose district is comprised of at least 80% of the citizens in the city that they represent. Coon Rapids' largest portion is 55%. That's about a difference of 11,000 people. For a city of over 60,000 people, we have been at a disadvantage when compared to our peer cities by lacking a singular voice for our city in either chamber. With the current alignment, it wasn't until 2018 that we even had a representative living in the city in both chambers of the legislature. The changes made in 2010 shifted Coon Rapids away from a consolidated voice and divided up our city and citizens' ability to advocate for themselves in a cohesive manner at the legislature. So why is this so important to us aside from having a cohesive community? Well, what we're finding as I currently sit as a citizen member on the Transportation Advisory Board of the Metropolitan Council, as well as a planning commissioner in the city here, and I'm well exposed to the transportation needs and the economic needs that this city has been asking for. By not having a singular voice, we are finding that it is more and more difficult to advocate for our needs at the legislature going forward. I hear this every month at our planning meetings or at the TAB meetings, where city and county elected officials alike are talking about how they need bonding money or funding to make any significant changes to their aging infrastructure and updates and expansion to meet their needs. As we've heard before, Coon Rapids also serves as a significant economic hub with the Riverdale Center drawing in shoppers from all of our surrounding cities on the north side of the Mississippi River, and is home to some of the primary transportation routes along the Mississippi corridor, as Mr. Wortler highlighted. Highway 10 bisects the city on a southeast-northwest alignment. Hanson Boulevard serves as a north-south connector from the Mississippi up to Andover. Highway 610 connects us to Brooklyn Park across the river. 125th Avenue / Main Street serves as an east-west connector from Anoka to Coon Rapids to Blaine. There are almost 2 million vehicle miles a day traveling within and through Coon Rapids on all of our roads. Maintaining this infrastructure requires a consolidated and focused support within the legislature, and we are lacking that. But another point I'll raise here, and we've heard before, is that none of those connections are going to the city of Champlin. As a matter of fact, where I live, the nearest home in the city of Champlin is 990 feet away. However, to get there is a 15-minute, 9-mile trip to the cities of Anoka and Brooklyn Park. The only way to get there directly is to own a boat. So when it comes to transportation and commerce, Coon Rapids shares much more in common with its southerly and easterly neighbors of Fridley, Spring Lake Park, Blaine, Anoka than it does with Champlin. I ask that this committee consider that our representation be less fragmented and more consolidated, and I hope that you can more closely align our representation with our population, transportation, and commerce needs. As we currently are aligned, we feel that we're lacking a go-to voice for Coon Rapids in both chambers. Thank you very much.
Mr. Geisler, when did you say that this started, or this problem became onerous?
In the 2010 redistricting, which I believe was solidified in 2012, the last redistricting was when the city was refragmented.
Thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. Artis Wexler.
Madam Chair, Ms. Wexler is not available to join.
Patrick Bryant.
Hello, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me, Madam Chair, and thanks for this opportunity to testify. My name is Patrick Bryan. I've been a Bloomington resident for 27 years. And I'm hoping to provide some testimony today on why Bloomington should be considered a community of interest with the rest of the South Metro. To be candid and succinct, we're really a bridge community between Richfield, which shares some similarities with us, and the rest of the Southern Metro area of Apple Valley, Burnsville, and Lakeville. At the federal level, Bloomington is typically drawn into a district with the West Metro, despite Richfield, with whom we share a state senator, being drawn in with Minneapolis, while Burnsville, Savage, and Egan are drawn into the second district. This is all to say that finding out who represents you in the South Metro can be a little confusing. I myself personally shop in the South Metro. I drive south to travel to all of my favorite restaurants. I go to the Mall of America. I shop at Burnsville Center and the like, as do almost all of my neighbors. I think of myself as distinctly part of that metropolitan area, as opposed to the Western Metro, which if you looked at Dr. Brower's map again, you'd see that Bloomington is really hanging out there as this right end tail of CD3. And I know my neighbors think of us as part of the South Metro also. Including us as part of a community of interest with that area will not only make more sense from a representation standpoint, but also solidify the reality of those of us who call Bloomington home and also call the South Metro home. Bloomington is Minnesota's fifth largest city and is located south of 494, as I'm sure you all know. A police officer friend of mine told me a while back that they used to refer to 494 as the Great Wall because it was a distinct separation between us and Richfield. We were much more similar to the communities of the South Metro area than we were to the communities of metropolitan Minneapolis. And we, you know, when we look at transportation in particular, we rely on 35W, which connects us with our Burnsville and Lakeville neighbors to the south. Additionally, we're distinctly separated from our neighbors to the west by Highway 169 and really a string of very beautiful lakes in the western part of our city. Furthermore, Bloomington residents who rely on public transportation find that the blue line connects us first with the Mall of America and then with Minneapolis. The red line connects us with Apple Valley, and the soon-to-be-finished Metro Orange line will connect us with Minneapolis, certainly Richfield, Bloomington, and Burnsville along I-35. This is all to say that while our district at the federal level associates us with the western suburbs and cities as far north as Rogers, our state transportation officials look at us and recognize us as an important hub connecting the southern suburbs to Minneapolis. So while I've spoken a bit about our roads and transportation, it's also important to recognize the natural beauty of which Bloomington has claim. One third of our city is designated as parks and green space, and is part of the Minnesota Valley's Wetlands and Highland Lake Park Reserve, which also have their home here. A number of years ago, my neighbors and I participated in a state-funded project to plant a water garden along the entirety of a run of land in order to help clean up some of the Minnesota waters. The Minnesota River Valley, in fact, abuts part of my area and my neighborhood, and we certainly think of that as one of our most important natural resources. The Minnesota Valley wetlands are especially important to our area, given their uniqueness and proximity to large industrial centers and the airport. Protecting this area is certainly something we embrace, but it's something that more than one city alone can handle, which is why that border that is created by this reserve and that we share with Eagan and Mendota Heights is vitally important and links us to these southern suburb areas. Lastly, some of the things that I love about Bloomington is the ability to get away to these natural resources and the natural beauty in this part of Minnesota. I myself am an avid sailor and often travel to Lake Pepin and Lake City to sail, traveling through Rosemont and Lakeville and the like. In summation, in the coming redistricting session, my neighbors and I would like Bloomington to get credit that it deserves as an anchor of the South Metro area. And in consideration of that, perhaps that's part of what can make Coon Rapids get the treatment that it would like. Rather than just being part of a district that stretches up and around the western part of the city and as far north as we've heard as Rogers, we are much more a South Metro area city than we are the West. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for that extensive commentary, and you made your point. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Vince Baudette.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and I hope you can hear me, and I hope you did not hear my dog a minute ago.
Your hopes have been granted.
Okay, well, here we go. I think what I'm hearing here is actually the makings of a developing win-win situation. We had Greg Pepin and a few others tell us that it would be very good to reunite Carver County. And also others are saying, well, let's put Coon Rapids back together again in a different congressional district, or do what we can to get it reunited anyway. And then there's also Brooklyn Park, that marriage to Brooklyn Center. So it again looks like a win-win situation based on these testimonies. The net effect of doing some of these things, the elimination or the reduction from CD3 of the rest of Coon Rapids, part of it is in Coon Rapids, but the removal of the rest of Coon Rapids, excuse me, and possibly Brooklyn Park, then the addition of the west half of Carver County, that's about, about 40,000 voters, I'm guessing. That, I think, gets us down to the desirable numbers. And again, I think some people are actually suggesting we do these things, even if in a in different messages. My wife and I returned to the Twin Cities area in 1997. After 20 years in some other states, and we chose to live in Carver County because we wanted to live in an environment where local government control is a high priority for the like-minded citizens there. During the first decade of the 21st century, Carver County was unified in one congressional district, And when a unified Carver County speaks to a congressional representative, that person has no choice but to listen carefully. Unified Carver County populace has more influence not only on a congressional rep, but also on legislators, local news outlets, et cetera. So in the last redistricting cycle, however, Carver County lost its unified congressional district status. Carver County did. And the redistricting of 10 years ago resulted in an erosion of the perceived need in Carver County for the need to speak with one voice to all governing entities impacting Carver. That is, the western third of Carver County was made part of the 6th Congressional District. And this separation inevitably resulted in the reduced messaging continuity in Carver County over our governance. Without a unified voice, another unfortunate outcome has been the elevated role of the unelected, unaccountable Met Council. The residents of Carver County have suffered as a result. 10 years ago, Western Carver County was very rural and experiencing less population growth than Eastern Carver County. So as a result, it was less impacted by the intrusion, if you will, of the Met Council into Carver County with regard to land use, transportation, etc. But this has dramatically changed over the last 10 years, and Western County is now experiencing significant population growth, a trend exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, technological change, et cetera. And homes in Western Carver County are in high demand now, and there is no end in sight to population growth. So as Western Carver County rises in population, the Met Council will increasingly intrude on the lives of Carver County. And I will tell you, at the risk of being a little too blunt, the residents out here, we simply don't, we know we have to accept the Met Council, but we would much rather take as much governance as we can, and we simply don't want any more intrusion than is absolutely necessary by that entity. It's obvious to many Carver County residents that the Met Council seems to be governing to achieve homogeneity of the entire metro area. That's the feeling we get, whether right or wrong. And that's in direct conflict, again, with the high valuation Carver County residents place on the local control of government. So once again, Carver County deserves a unified countywide voice to make its case to the Met Council and other elected representatives. The Carver County, just for example, the Carver County residents now are concerned that Met Council will, without much or any approval out here, opt to bring in light rail where it is likely not going to be wanted. If that ever happens, I hope Carver County somehow is sold on it rather than having it forced upon them. We want the voice of all of our legislators and a single member of Congress to speak in a coordinated manner, in part to reverse what we see as intrusion of the unelected, unaccountable Met Council. The best way to achieve this, once again, is to reunify all of Carver County as a vital component of the 3rd Congressional District. And there is a way to do that, make the population come out right. And that is, you have people up in the north suburbs, they want unification too. That can perhaps be done in CD6, possibly some going into CD or CD5. But that can be done. It is a doable thing. And I think one last time, I think the people of Carver County deserve to have unification in the 3rd District for purposes of representation and governance. Thank you.
I appreciate your comments, but I'm a little mixed up on what you were talking about with the Metro Council. And you want... Carver County has how many state representatives now?
We have, let's call it 2.5. We have the part of the north part of Chanhassen, 4 precincts, is one. It's a partial legislative district, and then we have 2 full districts in 47A.
Okay. But you
the
think
Met Council
that...
comments, I'm sorry, go ahead now. Go ahead, please.
Does part of Carver County not have Metro Council now?
No, all of Carver County is in the jurisdiction, if you will, of the Met Council.
Okay.
And my point is, I don't mean to be mean-spirited, but I do mean to say that the residents in Carver County, both east and west, place a very high valuation on local governance. And that means governance obviously is going to be less cherished, if you will, if it's coming from a Met Council of unelected representatives that are not even residing here. So that's the distinction I want to make, if that makes sense.
Thank you. That's a good clarification. I understand better now. Okay. And then you want Carver County to stay and all of Carver County to be in CD3. Is that correct?
That is correct. The okay. West third is now in CD6. And I would really like to see, many of us in Carver County would like to see, again, one county united in the one congressional district, logically CD3.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. And thank you for your testimony. Kevin Anderson.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Anderson. I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner representing District 7, which has the cities of Champlin, Dayton, Rogers, Maple Grove, Corcoran, Greenfield, Hanover, Medina, Loretto, Plymouth, Independence, Rockford, Maple Plain, Minnetrista, St. Bonifacius, and Mound. Really almost all of Western Hennepin County. As you know, every 10 years, it's the responsibility of government to count everyone and then do our best to make sure that every person is represented equally, fairly, and with a well-functioning government. Now, I want to just take a moment to reiterate how grateful I am to the people of Minnesota and the census workers that did their extraordinary work in the middle of a pandemic to make sure that we kept all 8 of our congressional seats. It was no small feat, and I am incredibly grateful for that. It's now in the redistricting is the responsibility to ensure that our representatives are not only elected each year fairly, but able to do their job effectively for the next 10 years. So today I'm testifying to highlight the importance of preserving the political subdivision of the county. Now, as I'm sure most of you are aware, the role of the county is to be the administrator of state and federal policy and money at the local level. It's because of this responsibility that it's so important for residents within the county and the cities within the county to have political boundaries that make sense to the average person. We've heard a number of people today talk about the challenges that boundaries like the Mississippi River on the north pose to some of this. Now, I think making sure that we have relationships between every level of government is imperative to having good government. Dividing Hennepin County further among additional congressional districts would present challenges to residents and to the elected officials in the cities. To make their job harder to speak with a unified voice, not only at the state level, but at the federal level. So as we are evaluating any of the maps presented, I would strongly encourage you to make sure that we are keeping these boundaries intact and not splitting up the Hennepin County cities or the Hennepin County beyond what it currently is. Thank you so much for your time. And if you have any questions, happy to answer.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Anderson. We appreciate your testimony and your thoughtful request.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Levang.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm going to keep this very short. I have lived in CD3 for about 50 years. I don't look like it, but I do. And I spent 35 years living in Orono, and now I am living in Plymouth. Over those many years, I have seen dramatic changes in the growth and expansion within CD3. No one could have ever imagined that Edina, Maple Grove, Eden Prairie, for instance, would become home to thousands of individuals and businesses, or that old Highway 12 would become 394, or even that old 18 would become 169. Those are just some markers about the changes. What is apparent to me when I consider historical growth and the proposed changes in CD3, I have concluded that the plan would not be in the best interest for CD3 inhabitants. Eliminating Victoria, Chaska, Minnetrista, St. Bonnie, Independence, and Lake Town Township is essentially taking a scissors to the western edge of CD3. These cities have long been interconnected communities. Together, for instance, Chaska, Chanhassen, and Victoria have adopted and promoted guidelines for members of these three communities. These shared values include citizenship, human growth, and dignity and respect. Eden Prairie, Chanhassen, Chaska, and Victoria share public transportation with the Southwest Transit. Minnetonka, Chaska, Orono, Plymouth, Independence, Shorewood, Excelsior, Deep Haven, Tonka Bay, Medina, Corcoran, Wayzata, Long Lake, and Mound form a school system for students along that CD3's western edge. Fire and emergency services link Independence, Greenfield, Medina, Corcoran, Loretto, Long Lake, Wayzata, and Mound. The cities that are slated for elimination are an integral part of CD3 and should remain within the district. I ask that you not eliminate these localities, but rather consider eliminating or swapping with the city of Champlin, which today has gotten a lot of negative press. Champlin can stand on its own, and if we would swap out Champlin for the other cities, we would be at near par. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony and clarification and announcement of those cities that should stay together through your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hollis Winston.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. I just would like a point of clarification. The maps that Ms. Levang is talking about, I really appreciate your comments, and this is not to take away from any of your comments. Please understand that. I just want to make it clear for the public record that we as the House have not issued any maps. So the maps that you were referencing as for the public record, I just wanted to be clear, these are not House maps, but your comments and your concerns are heard, and they will be taken into consideration as the House prepares its maps.
Yes, I was referring to the Watson map, but thank you. I appreciate your clarification there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that clarification, Vice Chair Cleburne. We appreciate it. Hollis Winston.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, Vice Chair Cleburne, and committee members. My name is Hollis Winston. I live in Congressional District 3, SD36 in Brooklyn Park. I currently own a business that advocates and consults a very diverse clientele of small businesses spread throughout the state, many of them in CD3. I wish for their voices to be heard effectively and in a representative fashion in the best tradition of the Minnesota concept of representative government. Because of that, I would ask that during the process of redistricting, two things are taken into account. One, that communities of interest are maintained across and within CD3. Others have spoken before me regarding exactly what that term means, but there has been a history of legislatively breaking up those communities in the past for partisan purposes. Contrary to that process, this process should remain as nonpartisan as possible so that our electeds are subject to a variety of differing ideas and viewpoints, not just at the Capitol, but at home as well. Having said that, I would also ask that we not artificially concentrate minority groups or communities of interest so that the full diversity of our congressional district is heard and represented fairly within our state. While these concepts may seem to conflict, I have faith that given the expertise of the folks who will be making these decisions, this will occur. And given the size and diversity within our city of Brooklyn Park, this balance is extremely important. Add in cities with similarity and tightly knit communities of interest. This balance is extremely important to maintaining a voice that fully reflects residents in this area. Honoring those considerations will ultimately allow us to have a truly representative and effective government in our state of Minnesota. And again, I want to thank you for allowing me the honor of speaking today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Winston. Good reminders for us. Representative Matz, or Ron Matz.
Yes, I'm not a representative.
No. I thought Ron was right.
Thank you for the honor. If drafted, I might consider, but no. Not today. Hello, Madam Chair. My name again is Ron Matz. I'm a current Bloomington resident and a former Eagan resident, hoping to provide testimony this afternoon on why Bloomington should be considered a community of interest with the rest of the South Metro area. The South Metro is where I eat, where I shop, and where I do my volunteer work. It's also where most of my and my wife's friendships were built and remain. The area is a logical community of interest that includes Bloomington, Eagan, Burnsville, and the surrounding cities to the south of 494 and to the east of 169. As one of Minnesota's largest cities and hubs of commercial activity, Bloomington is more than an afterthought to be redistricted around. It's a solid connection point between Minneapolis and southern Minnesota. It's where people from all over come to shop and to enjoy the many parks and nature preserves we have here. While many people think of the Mall of America when they think of Bloomington, and certainly they should, as collectively our biggest employer, Bloomington also features the headquarters of Donaldson Company, Ceridian Health Partners, and Toro, as well as significant locations for Pearson General Dynamics, Seagate Technologies, Express Scripts, and Wells Fargo. Many, if not most, of the people who work for these companies come into town from the southern suburbs of 35W and head back home at the end of the day. This was something I have witnessed in my time living in both Eagan and Bloomington, and was one of the main reasons these cities are part of a cohesive community of interest south of the Twin Cities. Having lived in Bloomington for most of my adult life, I continue to identify strongest with the southern and eastern suburbs of the metro area. I spend most of my free time either playing tennis in Mendota Heights, volunteering for the St. Paul Jewish Federation, or going to synagogue in Mendota Heights. The St. Paul Jewish Federation, interestingly, draws a number of volunteers from Bloomington as well, which is another reason for my deep connection to the region. The shopping place for my clothes, for my wife, and for me when she drags me along, is the Eagan Outlet Mall. And my favorite restaurant continues to be Jensen's Supper Club in Eagan, the best place for walleye in any part of the Twin Cities. In summation, it makes more sense to me for the good people of my community, for the district lines serving Bloomington, to reflect the on-the-ground reality of the city being an essential part of the South Metro. And for these reasons, for many more, I ask that the committee consider Bloomington to be a community of interest with the rest of the South Metro area. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Metz. We appreciate your contribution today and your participation. Duff Watson, Plymouth.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Fantastic. So with the last name Watson, unrelated to the previous speaker, but I'm usually used to going last. So appreciate you guys hanging in there. I'll be as brief as possible. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. Balance is important, as we heard previously. Many on this call have been much more articulate than I may be today, so I ask in advance for your patience. I'm testifying today to make my voice heard and to relay the concerns of my neighbors in light of the redistricting process. Unlike some previous testimony shared today, I'm not hopeful. Like other testimony, our voice in the chambers is not unified. Our issues are not the same as those more urban neighbors of ours to the east of where we live. Renters and homeowners have different priorities. And as Mr. Anderson pointed out, the political subdivision is important. However, redistricting has the risk of being damaging and being shrewd and stifling voice. No plan or map is ever going to be perfect. But first, you should know who I am and who my neighbors are and what we're all about. I'm a single dad of two teenagers. We live in Plymouth. We love our neighborhood of homeowners and are as diverse as they come. My next door neighbors are a multi-generational family with grandma and grandpa raising their grandchildren. On the other side of me is a retiree by force because of COVID policies foisted upon us. Too old for the workforce and too young to make his cash last. Next to him is, ironically, an economist with the Fed. We have single childless homes. We have nuclear families. And I'm dating myself here, but we even have mixed Brady Bunch-like families. We've got a retired nurse and his partner. We have small business owners and people that are running the corporate wheel, much as I am. We keep our yards up. We think that we're doing okay until the next tax increase or surprise bill shows up. We live in that space where money gets a bit tight. And payday is sometimes a welcome relief. We take the brunt of the tax increases. We take our kids to hockey practice in cars big enough to fit the gear. We volunteer for the causes that matter to us. We go to church. We like our dogs. We like our space. We hunt and we fish. And yes, we even own guns. We are proud of our community. We love our neighbors. But we're more West rural than we are West urban. So our votes matter, but as close as we may be to the largest cities in Minneapolis, our politics do not mirror those to just the east of us, to the east of 169, rather. We do not like the slide toward policies that seem to undermine the very hard work that we want to do. We don't like handouts. We like to do it ourselves, and that's why I got involved today. During the last year's unrest, we were nervous, but we waited with bated breath. We love our police, and like many, we think we can all do better. Our city was never on lockdown, but not one of us took down our American flags. And we stand for the national anthem, and we're decent, and we return our shopping carts when we go grocery shopping. The final thing that I'll leave with you is that this proposal could potentially be damaging because the redistricting plan may prevent individuals from being heard. Many of us have moved west to the communities we live in because of the very opportunity that provides our kids. The third, as you know, includes Hennepin County, Carver County, and Anoka County. We stretch west to Delano and Rockford and Waconia, areas west of 169, and dare I say even west of 494, look very different from where you may be sitting right now. The interests of our residents are about family values, a term aligned by some in recent years. We love our kids, we're trying, but we elect moderate candidates that give us the best shot at preserving our voices and our values. So I'll leave it with one last thing that I'll say. We're very jaded by the political process currently, and this includes the ruling class. And as our third base baseball coach yells, and the same to you, knock it off if this gerrymandering is anything less than political. Do not redistrict for an unfair advantage or stack the deck in favor of any one party. And please return your shopping cart while you're at it and be a decent human being. Thank you for letting me be heard.
Thank you, Mr. Watson, for your values and for your description of you and your neighbors and the people of Western Third District. Ms. Golden, do you want to try? I guess not.
Yeah, Ms. Golden called in. I'm not sure if the technological problems are continuing or if there's just a poor connection there. I'm guessing she can hear you, but not able to join. Thank you for the
effort. All right, we will go back and we will review her testimony by reading it. And we will include that in the participant list. Is Dr. Browers back, is still on?
I am.
Oh, good. Could you go back to your handout or to your graphs with the populations again and review them in relation to what we heard about South Metro, West Metro, and Coon Rapids? Or is that an unfair request?
Let's look together. One moment, please.
We do have a little bit of time, and I thought before, while this testimony is still going around in our brains, if we could have a review of where the numbers are, and we know that we have to make the third district smaller in population. But we didn't really hear that so much as we heard swapping of one part of the district for another part of the district being part of third, but then that leaves some hanging things or areas or parts of other districts, but.
Madam Chair, I think what might be most useful is if I can give you the pieces of each city within the district, and I don't have those numbers immediately available to share with you right now, but I will pull them up and share them with the committee just as soon as I have them. It may be while we're still talking, but does that sound like what would be the most useful? The number of people in the 2020 population within CD3 by city?
Yes.
Okay. I'll pull those up.
All right. Thank you. Representative Clyburn, can you think of another way of?
Well, I was just looking at the, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the third slide of Dr. Browers, where we were talking about the population percentage change in each of these communities. And I think that I think what we're hearing today from many of our testifiers is the importance of keeping communities of interest together. And as we've heard from other individuals, looking at what it is that makes up our communities. I mean, we've heard about transportation, we've heard about shopping, we've heard about schools, and we clearly heard Mr. Winston telling us we need to be cautious to make sure that all voices are heard and that we're careful not to pack districts, but also to make sure that all of the voices within those districts are heard and heard equally and fairly. Right. And so I think it would be interesting to hear from Dr. Brower those changes, if we can, citywide, city by city. And I think that in her slide where she's talking about getting, painting a better picture of how individuals view themselves, not how we define them, but how they define themselves is very important.
Mm-hmm. Madam Brower.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm happy to pull those numbers and to share those with you. I don't have them right in front of me right now.
Okay. All right, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just one brief comment. I think it might be important to remind the participants that the congressional districts and the legislative districts are completely independent. I've heard a number of the testifiers mention both legislative districts and congressional districts, and I got the impression that they think they share borders, and they of course, do not. And it might be good to mention that as we're going through these meetings so that people observing the meetings understand that the congressional map is completely independent from the legislative map. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. That was a good emphasis that I hadn't made, and I appreciate that a lot. Yes, and the congressional districts will change. The House districts definitely will change in some cases. In some cases, they could be very similar to what they already are. But the third congressional district perhaps has the most changes that will take place because they're over the numbers that are required for one vote, one person. Any other comments to make then? If not, this meeting will be in recess until 7 o'clock. Is that correct, Ms. Conley? 7 o'clock?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Call this September 13th meeting of the Redistricting House of Representatives Redistricting Committee back to order. For those just joining us, the committee met earlier this afternoon and went into recess at approximately 4:40. This is our fourth listening session. We posted this meeting a month ago to give the public notice and enough time to prepare critical, competent directions of what we should look for as we're planning our redistricting suggestions to the public and turning them into maps for the public to review. This is a critical component of our work, and we value the perspectives each person offers. We welcome input from all Minnesotans. We are holding the hearings via Zoom at a variety of times to reach a wide range of people. We acknowledge that no schedule fits every person. So if people are not available to participate via Zoom or during these times, the option to submit written testimony is provided and will be accepted through the month of September. We ask that testimony be limited to 3 to 5 minutes to provide opportunity for everyone who wants to testify. Given the number of people who sign up, we do have some extra time if people want to take more than 5 minutes. Written testimony containing recommendations will be posted on the Redistricting Committee website. While we would like to get the testimony in advance of the hearing, we will accept written testimony for committee consideration through the end of September. The purpose of these public input sessions is for members to listen to what the public has to say. Unless there are purposes or questions for purposes of clarification, members will hold their comments so that we have the time to hear everyone who wants to testify. Tonight, before we start testimony, we have set aside about 15 minutes or so for members and the public to hear from state demographer Susan Brower, Dr. Susan Brower, who will begin with a short summary of the changes in the 6th Congressional District. And then we'll hear from Mr. Gehring, our House research expert on redistricting timelines. Welcome, Dr. Brower. Welcome, Mr. Gehring. Please begin your testimony at this time. Dr. Brower.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just sharing my, hoping to share my screen here. One moment, please. Right. Can you see that okay?
I can.
Okay.
Yep, we can see it.
Thank you. So my name is Susan Brower, for the record. I work in the Department of Administration, and my title is Minnesota's State Demographer. I've been asked to give a brief overview of the changes in Congressional District 6, and so I will do that. The 2020 census showed that the 6th district grew by 70,967 people since the 2010 census. And so the district is now 733,957 people. That's 20,645 over the ideal population size for 2020, which is just over 713,000. If the committee decides to keep similar districts as those that were created, or a similar district shape for District 6 as that which was created after the 2010 census, it will need to shrink the geographic size of the 6th district by about 21,000 people, or 20,645,000 is the exact number. The 6th district is bisected by the I-94 corridor that runs through Benton, Stearns, Sherburn, Wright counties, so right from the northwest part of that shape that we see there, which is the 6th district, down to the southeast part is where I-94, where the corridor is. The district also stretches toward out over Anoka and Washington counties, all the way over to the Wisconsin border, and southward through the western part of Carver County. You can see that at the edges of the district, where you see those yellow areas, those are townships for the most part. Some are cities, some are townships. That toward the edges of some of those edges of this district becomes much more rural than along that I-94 corridor that we saw, where we saw a lot of growth this decade. We zoom in a bit more, the cities and townships that kind of stand out in terms of growth and losses. First of all, just north of Hennepin County, we see Otsego County, which is in Wright County, that very dark blue area on the map. I'm not sure if you can see my cursor, but if you can, I'm pointing to it right now, grew by just about 47% since the last census. Haven Township, which is southeast of St. Cloud, also stands out in terms of a high growth area. And then in terms of a larger loss, we see this kind of orange area here just to the east of the St. Cloud area. That's St. Joseph Township, and that's actually the result of an annexation rather than population loss. The population was shifted just because the boundary was shifted. I shared earlier that the district, 6th district, grew by about 70,900 people, almost 71,000 people. In this district, in the 6th district, the white population did grow, and that's unlike many other geographies that we look at around the state. But there was also strong growth, especially for the Black or African American racial group which grew from about 14,000 in 2010 to 33,000 in 2020. Other major racial groups grew as well, including the Hispanic group, which added about 10,000 residents in this district. The Asian group added about 5,000, and the multiracial group added close to 19,000. Race is just one way that communities of interest are defined. I'm sure we'll hear more about other ways to define communities of interest, but it's one way that they're quantified in the census. So that's why I am sharing the racial numbers with you tonight. There were some changes to the way that the Census Bureau collected race this decade, and it made it easier for people to identify as belonging to more than one race group or to identify as multiracial. And so we saw a big increase in the number of people who identified as multiracial. Most demographers believe that it was an improvement. There's still more improvement to go. There's other things that the Census Bureau could do in the future to improve the collection of these types of data. But for now, we have what we have, and what we've seen is a large increase in the group that understands themselves to be multiracial and identifies that way. So we've seen that group grow in this district, but also across the state and across the U.S. Finally, just a note that the census data that were collected in 2020 were collected during a global pandemic. And so we are still watching to see what that means for the quality of the data. There were a number of adjustments that needed to happen on the fly, and there remains concerns about the quality of the data. The data that we have to work with are the data that we have to work with. And so while I am very interested to hear if the committee or anyone else out in the public finds things that look unusual to them, these are the data that will be used for redistricting, and we can follow up through other processes in the future if we find that there are concerns. The Census Bureau, for the first time, used a method called differential privacy to protect the confidentiality of people who responded to the census. They've always used other methods, and this is a new one, and so we're watching to see what the impact of that will be on the data as well. And finally, in response to our earlier meeting earlier today, I added one more table, which I will be sending to the committee administrator and to the members, just showing the population by county in District 6 to give you a sense of that population distribution across counties. When it's available, I'll also be providing data that shows city and township within the district as well. But for now, this is what was quickly available to share with you right away. And so you can see that distribution here. So those are my prepared remarks, Madam Chair. I'm happy to take questions, and I'm looking forward to hearing the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bauer. Are there any questions?
Chair Murphy, Representative Torkelson has his
Representative
hand.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Chair Murphy, and thank you, Dr. Brower, for your presentation. I may have dug into this a little bit prior hearings. The relatively new category of identifying as multiracial, do we have any indication of where those people came from the previous census? Is it particular? Do you have any information along those lines? I guess it's my question.
My answer is going to be no. So, yes, I understand the question. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you. Representative Torkelson. It would be my understanding that. My expectation that it would be people who otherwise would have identified as a single race, but we don't know which race groups they would have otherwise identified at this point. that's something that I believe people will research in the coming years. But for right now, we don't have the specific information about how that change altered people's responses.
Madam Chair, if I could ask a follow-up.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Brower, for that answer. And we've seen this large percentage jump in that category, in that area, and it's a little hard to understand the impact on the other percentages that are on your tables when we don't really know if they've jumped from any particular category more than others. It sounds like we probably won't know anytime soon. Is that correct?
Dr. Brower.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, we do have information about what categories they belong to right now. And so I'm happy to share those data with you, just what it means to belong to multiple races, so we can see whether they've answered that they're, say, American Indian or Indigenous and white non-Hispanic, or we can see those categories. We just don't have a good sense of what they would have answered had that option not been available to them or if it was presented to them in the same way that it was in 2010. We don't have a good sense for how that change altered their answer.
Thank you, Dr. Brower. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Brower. Are there any other questions? If not, Mr. Gehring, review the timeline.
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, Matt Gehring from the House Research Department. I'm just going to walk through quickly the handout you've all seen as members of the committee several times now, but just for the benefit of those in the audience, walking through the timeline and then some basic duties of the redistricting process. This handout and timeline is available with the committee materials. You see the first page has the calendar of events that are important to the redistricting process. February 15th of 2022 is the biggest date for purposes of this committee and for purposes of legislative and congressional redistricting. February 15th is the date that state law expects that maps will be done and enacted at the congressional and legislative level. After that date, the gears will start turning at within local governments. So there's deadlines in March of 2022, as well as April of 2022 for reestablishing municipal precinct boundaries, as well as local ward boundaries and other local election districts. So all that work will be done at the local level and has to wait until there are completed congressional and legislative districts in order to make all the districts sort of fit together. The 2022 election cycle is the first cycle at which the new districts will be used. So the districts that you're creating through this committee's work will be the districts that candidates will file for when they file for office next spring, and then we'll run at the November 2022 election. On the second page, I've just got some basic outlines of the specific duties of both the legislature as well as local governments in the redistricting process. So it's the legislature's responsibility under the Minnesota Constitution to enact congressional and state legislative district boundaries. And you've already started that work through the work of this committee. And part of that will include both drawing the maps as well as establishing principles that we use to guide how you actually draw the individual boundaries. And I would expect you'll probably hear some testimony tonight about what principles should be used. There are some principles that are that you're obligated to conform to. That's because they're either required by federal law or the state constitution. So things like equal population and contiguity and nesting of districts, which I can explain if people have questions, but those principles are principles that are required of you. And then you have the option of adopting additional principles as well, including principles on communities of interest, as Ms. Brower talked about, and others as you wish. The second, or the, sort of the two other headings on the handout highlight the work that's required of local governments. So there's specific county responsibilities related to establishing new commissioner districts within each county, as well as counties are responsible for certain unorganized territories within their county. And then there's responsibilities for cities, towns, and school districts as well. And each of the bullet points under those headings on this page of the handout just points you to specific statutes that govern that process, including some statutes that create principles for establishing those local government boundaries, and then what happens if the work doesn't get completed. And Madam Chair, I think I'll leave it there and take questions if you have them.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Gehring? If not, we will. I thank you, Dr. Brower and Mr. Gehring. And we have five people signed up to testify, plus some written testimony that was provided to members and posted. As we listen, it might be helpful to keep in mind the definition of communities of interest presented to us by Wendy Underhill from the National Conference of State Legislatures. Communities of interest, geographical areas such as neighborhoods of a city or regions of a state where the residents have common demographic and or political interests that do not necessarily coincide with the boundaries of a political subdivision, such as a city or county. The first person that has signed up to testify and may begin is Chris Kaufman from Hanover, the 6th Congressional District.
Thank you. My name's Chris Kaufman. I'm the mayor of Hanover, the city of Hanover, and we lie in House District 30B. I've been on the council for 11 years now, and I'm advocating to keep CD6 the same, in specifically House District 30B. Previously, before the last census, before the last census, we were in the Hennepin County area. We're one of the communities of interest where we split two counties. 75% of the city is in Wright County and 25% in Hennepin County. Currently, we are in the Wright County area as far as our district goes. And we would prefer to stay there. It's more homogeneous and more of, it's a better fit for our city to be on the Wright County side and not be split and or thrown into the Hennepin County side. So I am advocating that specifically House District 30B stay the same, especially for Hanover. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Kaufman. We appreciate your input, and we will consider it as we proceed along the way and start drawing our maps.
Any questions for me?
I don't think so. I don't see hands.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Shannon Hawes, St. Cloud.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can
thank you for having me. My name is Shannon Hawes, and I serve as the chair to the St. Cloud Area Schools District 742 School Board. I am serving my second term on there, and I wanted to speak tonight about the uniqueness and diverse population of our school district and how we are drastically different than communities that we are surrounded by. And what I hope would happen is that St. Cloud doesn't get lost in representation that is very much needed because of our uniqueness. The St. Cloud Area School District has a student population, students of color, at around 60%. This is drastically different to our neighboring communities. When adjacent to us, we have Ricori, Sauk Rapids, and Sartell school districts. They're running about 12 to 16% students of color compared to St. Cloud area, which is 60% student of color. Then when you look at other school districts in the 6th district, which would be Annandale, Becker, Buffalo, Elk River, those students of color run from 15% to 7%. Again, St. Cloud at 60% students of color. In my second term, at the beginning of my first term, the numbers for students of color has changed about 15%. We have grown about 15% of our student population has increased of students of color. Also unique to the St. Cloud area is are qualified as English language learners. Currently, and my numbers are coming off the Minnesota Department of Education Minnesota report card that you can view online. English language learners for the St. Cloud area is at 23%. Our adjacent schools, Sauk Rapids and Sartell, 1%. St. Cloud area schools, 23% students, English language learners, and in our neighboring communities are at 1%. Those numbers to me are just outstandingly, drastically different. We as an administration for the St. Cloud school know that our approach to serving these students in our community is much different and how we're going to represent them compared to our neighboring districts, just as it is in what you're looking at, how you serve the St. Cloud Area School District, how we serve that compared to these smaller communities must have a different approach to it to have effective results. And I just wanted to speak tonight to say, please know how different we are and how our approach needs to be adjusted to those differences. So thank you.
Ms. Haas, for clarification, what's name? Will you give the full title of the name of the school district?
Sure. It's Independent School District 742. It's called St. Cloud Area School District. We include St. Cloud, St. Joseph, Waite Park, St. Augusta, Clear Water, Clear Lake, and then some very bits and pieces of some townships. Very, very small.
Okay. What's the total mileage for the school district?
We are an extremely large district. And let me see if I can come up with that really. I apologize. I don't know that. I know that that is one of our challenges, that we are extremely, our boundaries, our territory is large. And I know that would be on our website somewhere, but I don't know where that is.
That's fine. Is this an old school district or is it ever growing? Do new places come in and ask to be part of the St. Cloud Area School District 742?
No.
No. Okay, so it's pretty stable.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
And has been for a long time.
As long as I can remember, yes.
And so people that are buying a new house in those areas that you mentioned, they know their kids will be assigned to the school district.
It's very much an awareness and unfortunately a misunderstanding. Realtors will advertise. You got into a sensitive topic with me. Realtors will advertise very, very strongly as to when you buy this house, where are you going to put your students? And there are some underlying messages to that, as well as some misunderstandings. Statistics can be misunderstood. And if you were to pick apart the test scores and the MCA scores that are advertised, when you put them all together, you don't understand what you're looking at, and you think that your child will not get a fair education in St. Cloud school districts. But what you're looking at is a hodgepodge. If you pull it out and you compare white free and reduced to white non-free and reduced compared to white non-free, and you go apple to apple, St. Cloud School Districts is a great school district, but it's misunderstood when you put that whole number together. Mm-hmm. Why isn't that number look great? Well, 23% of our student population is English language learners. I don't know about you, but I certainly wouldn't score well on a test that I didn't speak fluently.
Right. Thank you. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know it's often difficult when testifying to do a quick Google search at the same time. So I just for the record, under the 742's webpage, it appears that St. Cloud Area Schools is the 17th largest district. It's 250 square miles. Could that be correct? It's a massive district. So I just wanted to put that in the public record at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Ms. Haas, thank you very much. And thank you for bringing your testimony to us.
Thank you for listening.
We will review it as we go along. Joe Melcher, St. Cloud.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Joseph Melcher, a 20-year faculty member in the psychology department at St. Cloud State University, and also a resident of House District 14A. My goal this evening is to make a simple point that any new legislative district in the area around St. Cloud State University be drawn so as to correct an issue that arose from the last redistricting. Currently, my community of interest, which are St. Cloud State University students who live on or near campus, are split in a way that could impair their ability to speak as a body and to work with one representative. The current House districts place students who live on campus and in the areas just east and west adjacent to the campus into District 14B. However, a significant number of other students live south of a boundary that literally cuts through campus, placing them in District 14A. All of these areas that I've mentioned include student rental housing and, of course, the dormitories on campus that are all within walking distance of campus. And I just want to emphasize again that you can cross University Avenue from the north side of campus to the south side of campus and be walking from one district into another district. And so that's the basic point that I wanted to make.
Well, Dr. Melcher, has there been any competition built up because between 14A and 14B and particular candidates?
I'm not aware of any. No.
Yeah. But you would like them to all be speaking to one representative rather than two?
Yeah, it seems logical enough that the students comprise a community of interest and they do, for instance, elect a student body president. Yeah,
oh.
Was a former student body president was on the call here earlier. Maybe this thunderstorm knocked her off. It was Britton Mickelson. Anyhow, yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yes, any questions, other questions?
No, but I appreciate you bringing that issue before us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Britt Mickelson is next. Did she come back?
Yep, still here.
Oh, good. Welcome, Britt.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I wanted to add a little bit more context to what Joe was sharing because we've worked together on a lot of these projects, so I'd love to add some more context. My name is Britton. I have lived in St. Cloud since 2014, when I first learned about how poorly the districts are laid out while working on voter engagement at SCSU. I have been the College Democrats president on and off for about 3 years. And so that's kind of where my experience comes from. Since 2014, I have voted and worked in each election with a focus on campus community until pretty recently. I've lived in both 14A and 14B. I currently live in 14B. I have been really lucky to see the increased politicization of young people, but I've also been really frustrated by the efforts that elected officials have taken across the country to make it more difficult for young people to navigate our election system. So if you've ever worked with first-time voters, which I hope you have, you know how important it is to not only share information about your preferred candidate, but to also educate them on the process of voting. So we know that when voters start voting young, they continue that pattern. But this takes a lot more investment from candidates, campaign workers, activists. And the way the district is split makes it even more difficult to do that, since a lot of that education is housed on SCSU's campus. Both the partisan education, like some of the work I did with the College Democrats, and also the nonpartisan and just political education that you find in the classrooms, but also from student government and other campus clubs. So as Joe mentioned, the split between 14A and B cuts about 3/4 of the campus off from the other fourth. So while all the dorms are in 14B, the athletic centers and all the students who live near it are in 14A. As most of us know, students traditionally live close to their campus. So if the house district with SCSU in it is split, the student district will be as well. However, because most of the young people living in 14A go to school in 14B, they mostly interact with candidates running for office in 14B. Another really important thing that I want to highlight is that this also splits the city council Ward 1, which houses most of the student district. Splitting this ward means that there is a pretty solid block of young voters who have less voting power, thus less of a voice with their electeds. That's why I think it's really important to kind of bring up what Joe was saying about how it's less powerful and there's less people willing to work with young people because our voting block is split. Even though the campus community and the surrounding area is considered one area, it is very much two less powerful voting blocks when you consider the district. This also causes a ton of confusion on election day. I've had students tell me that they didn't see their preferred candidate, which was the 14B candidate, on their 14A ballot. So they just skipped it. Actively electing to not participate in our process really harms people's ability to access it. Another really unfortunate problem, though, is that when someone is elected to office with high support from the townships versus the campus community, which happens a lot because of the split, they spend less time investing in the city centers where more young people, people of color, and new voters live. As someone who's lived in both sides of the district, I can feel the impact of being represented by someone who was elected with the majority of student vote versus not young people voting. This also pits the district against each other, and the cost is that we can't do what's right for the whole district. It's really important to me that we make it easier for young people and new voters to vote. My philosophy in general in politics has always been that we should be building the future that we wished we had when we felt the most powerless. And we can't do that when voting districts are drawn in a way that splits communities and their power in half. We need to fix the split of Senate District 14. And I think it needs to include all of campus and the surrounding areas to make sure that young people are getting a fair voice and who represents them compared to the quieter voice that is caused by a split between the two districts. I really appreciate your work on this. I'm happy to answer any questions and share more about my experiences and all the work I've done in St. Cloud. But most importantly, I ask you to do what's right and not keep splitting up the voting power of people who want to participate in our democracy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen.
Holy cow. Did this happen just in the last 10 years, or was it all one district before 2010?
So unfortunately, in 2010, I think I was 11 years old, and I wasn't in Minnesota.
Maybe Dr. Melcher can help.
I do not know that. Good question.
Okay, we can find that out. But I thought that would be, if one of you had the answer, I would accept that answer for tonight rather than wait for morning.
I've been told that the district has been split, and it's been based on the most recent district or redistricting, but I don't want to say that that's true. That's just kind of what I've heard.
Well, to add a little comfort, I live up in northeastern Minnesota, and the first campaign I ran in, I was in District 14B. So the number moves around too. Thank you very much. Representative Tice, do you have a point on this topic?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. And I would just like to say that I represent 14A. And I think the way the boundaries are set right now, and I wish I could say for certain that they were the same, but I don't know for sure 10 years ago. I will tell you that it really adds to the fact that, and Representative Wolgamont is on 14B, on 14A. It really adds a camaraderie to us in that we work together many times on a lot of the things, the requests that the campus has. One of my precincts, which is right south of the campus, is not only a lot of students, but it's also a lot of our Somali community as well. And so it's not just necessarily students. And a lot of the folks that are there are folks that we see and have been there for many, many years. But I really enjoy, in fact, Representative Wolgamont, Senator Putnam, and I had a meeting at the president's office this past week. And it really seems like it has created a way for us to really work together always in that district so that we make sure that we've got our bases covered no matter what we're looking at. But again, I really appreciate that and have always enjoyed working with whomever is on the B side. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your participation tonight. Dr. Melcher and Ms. Nicholson, do you have any remarks to Representative Tice based on what she said?
It does strike me. It's an interesting point, and one that I wouldn't have thought of not having been the representative in her position, that it maybe can draw people together in that sense if they're cooperating around the common needs of constituents there. So, yeah, that's an interesting and valid point. And they have to balance that against some of the confusion that Britton was talking about with regards to ballots and where students live and so mm-hmm. on. Yeah. So,
and when they come on campus, and especially for the first time they're on campus and they don't know they're split, I imagine it would be difficult to get the story out of who's where and who's representing who when there are several candidates running for what seems to be the same job.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I add something to that point?
Please go ahead.
Great.
Ms. Nicholson.
Yeah, when I was at SDSU, I'm 25 now, so I've been graduated for a bit, but when I was at SDSU, I was both the government relations chair at student government and then the college Democrats president. So I organized a lot of the events to do political education and election and like candidate engagements. I think actually, Tama, you and I worked together a couple times on those projects, but the problem with kind of the way politics is presented is someone from 14A, if they really want the student vote, if they really value that, if they invest in that vote, they're going to be spending more time in 14B. And that's not what a candidate in 14A should be doing. They should not be spending their time in another district recruiting people in their district. And the way that the district is set up right now, to really get that student vote, you either have to door knock at about 7, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, which can be hard in apartments sometimes, or you have to spend a lot of time in 14B trying to figure out who are your constituents, your potential voters, and how do you educate them on the complexities of how this district kind of works. So just in a time management thing, you know, it's hard for me to justify someone in 14A investing time in 14B because that's the only way they can invest in that chunk of the community. So I hope that kind of makes sense, but I think it's a waste of our resources.
Thank you. Good point. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I heard Dr. Melcher properly. Did you say that the campus is split along University Avenue? Is that what I heard you
yes.
say?
Yes, that is a dividing line between 14A and 14B, yes.
Okay, so it really is, it goes right through the campus. I just want to make sure that I heard that correctly.
Yeah,
okay.
There's the main upper half of campus, but then there's a section below, largely with the athletic complex, but there are faculty and classrooms down there as well on the southern half of campus.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate the clarification.
You're welcome.
Huh. Thank you for bringing this issue before us, and we will certainly concentrate more on it as we progress. You brought new meaning to split.
Thank you for listening.
You're both very vocal, very good. Christine Hewson, Wright County Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Wright County continues to experience rapid growth. We have increased our population 13.3% since the 2010 census, which was 124,700. We're now at 141,337. And fortunately, though, we do not have to redistrict our commissioner districts. So that will save the commissioners a lot of decision making next year. With the rules of redistricting for commissioner districts, you take the average, and the average population of Wright County, if you divide the population by five, it gives each commissioner district a average of 28,267. And under the statute, we can't have more than 10% or less than 10% of that number. And fortunately, all five commissioner districts fall within that range. So that's pretty fortunate. As Dr. Brower mentioned, Siegel is one of the fastest growing cities in this district, and it actually, with the 47%, it makes Otsego now the largest city in Wright County. So it wasn't too many years ago that it was a township, and now it's the largest city in the county. My main concern, really, in the redistricting of Congressional District 6 is to keep cities and townships, you know, in the same district. So you're not dividing cities and townships into different congressional districts. And I guess, you know, Brett had made that mention that when you're one city or one township, I think it's very important that you maintain as much, you know, unity as you can. So that's my main concern, just not splitting different cities in two, or take a part of it out and for one district and have the other part in another one. That is basically all I had.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
So you're really saying keep Wright County as tight as we can, as it is now.
That would be great. That would be great. But, you know, mainly not to, you know, divide a city into or two thirds or whatever. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Any questions? Oh, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Representative
Tice. Oops. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to reiterate that we feel the same way in this area as well, because the St. Cloud area, and by that I mean Wake Park, St. Augusta, St. Cloud, Sartell, Sauk Rapids, St. Joseph, even times we work with Clearwater, Clear Lake because of the school district. But we also have different, like the local government or the local sales tax, in which they have common community projects that happen and they work together in that. So keeping the area in District 6 as it is would certainly be a benefit. It would be very hard for us to do some of the projects that we do if we had to split up those areas and not be seen as a community. As we talked with the school district alone, it is a very different district and is very misunderstood. I agree with Ms. Haas in that it is very different and people don't understand it. We had an up, well, there wasn't, was it 2 years ago in 2019, that we almost lost one of our charter schools. And after talking with the licensors of that, it was really easy to see that they just didn't understand the district. And when they were talking about closing Stride, I said, you know what, if you saw our whole district, you would close it down as well, because we have got many, many different things happening and they, and nobody really understands it except for us, I think. I had the opportunity to go to Discovery School and it was interesting to listen to the principal at that time say that when we have teacher parent conferences, we have 10 different language interpreters. It's not one or two, it's 10. And that was kind of mind-blowing to me. I figured maybe there were maybe five, but no, 10. And a lot of people don't see us as being that diverse. So keeping us together really is very beneficial, not only with school district-wise, but I said also with the cities, because a lot of our projects that happen in the different cities are local, regional, different projects. And to split it apart would be quite disastrous, to say the least. And I think the districts are, the representative, the state districts, house districts, are really, really built to make sure that we have that camaraderie. Many times in with both the A and B side, we work together on most of these projects. And it really is a way to make our community feel like they are very represented. And so I would just really advocate for keeping us as close to what we are right now so that we don't lose these advantages. We don't lose what we have going in the school district. I'm very proud of what we've achieved. I'm very proud of our students, but I'm also very proud of our citizens, our communities and our cities working together to make sure that we have the best region, best area, best of everything in what we have right now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any comments on anything we've heard? That concludes the people that have signed up to testify. And before we leave, if anyone has anything from this afternoon's third congressional district hearing or this evening's sixth congressional district hearing that they want to comment about, this is your chance, committee members. Seeing none, then this completes the business that's before us and that was posted to the public for our consideration for today and this evening. And we will continue to accept written testimony for the third district and the sixth district and the districts that we had before today. And any districts that are left. Our next meeting is on Wednesday morning, beginning at 8:30 And on Wednesday, we will hear from people from the first and second congressional districts with their opportunity to testify to tell us what's most important to them about their local districts. I appreciate your attentiveness and participation this evening, all the people that testified and all the people that patiently listened, and will recall these testimonials as we progress in establishing our principles and our maps going forth. If there's no other business, this meeting is adjourned.